Lysenko, can you describe your background before the war in Vietnam, where you lived, your family situation, and your life in Hillsboro?
Well, I grew up on actually 1265 East Oak Street, Southeast Oak Street, so right in town, basically. Dad ran the Birdseye food processing plant there, and there were nine of us children. I was the seventh of nine. We all went to St. Matthew's grade school and then off to various Catholic high schools. All of us went either to Columbia Prep, or I went to Jesuit, and the girls all went to St. Mary's in the Valley. So that's where I grew up, and we lived in town, but I worked on the farm a lot when I was growing up.
And Hillsboro was pretty much a farming.
Yeah, it was pretty, you know, the center of town had other things, but generally, you know, the Birdseye plant was the big industry, and so all the farmers brought stuff into the plant to be processed.
And did you grow up in Hillsboro?
No, I grew up in Central Oregon, a little town called Antelope. I grew up on the Cavalry Ranch. I was one of seven children, and we met at the University of Portland before we went to college.
How did you wind up in the Air Force? Was it draft or volunteer?
No, actually, I went to the University of Portland and took Air Force ROTC on purpose. I wanted to fly jet airplanes in the Air Force, so that's, I went to the Air Force on purpose. It was kind of what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Was this before the Vietnam War?
Yeah, I graduated from college in 64 and got my pilot's Air Force pilot wings in the fall of 65. So Vietnam had not really started at that point, although at that point most of us volunteered to go over there right away.
So most people were volunteering?
I would say probably 50% were volunteers and the other 50% And the other 50% probably looked for assignments that wouldn't necessarily put them in combat, but I would say about 50%.
What was the drafting process? Can you describe kind of
the what?
The drafting.
Oh, well, I didn't get drafted, so
Okay.
I was a volunteer. I don't really know too much about the draft. Marilyn's brother was drafted, little brother.
Uh huh. He went into the Army and he was drafted when he was about 20. Other friends weren't drafted. Many of them went into the reserves.
Yep.
Where they did 6 months of active duty, and then they did reserve programs, and they could have been called up. They went to weekend meetings once a month or something for maybe 2 or 3 years, and that was say in the time frame that we were in college or just before.
Yeah, but see, Vietnam hadn't started. They weren't drafting.
They
were drafting, but it wasn't for war. You know, they were just filling their quotas, and so.
But
people still went to college to avoid the draft. They got married and had children to avoid the draft, and I think after Vietnam started, a lot of people started doing that. You know, getting into college, number one. While they were in college, they'd be deferred, they didn't have to go. And then they would hope that they would get too old while they were in college and they wouldn't have to go. But
it was a fact of life for a lot of young guys, though. And my brother, who was 5 years younger than I, went in when he was 20, and he went into the thick of
And that would have been Vietnam. That would have been about 67, 68 time frame. So.
How much did you know about the war before you went there?
Not very much, to be very honest with you. You know, there wasn't a whole lot being said about what we were there, you know, exactly why we were there and all that kind of stuff. We always just thought that, you know, those poor Vietnamese were, you know, being overrun by communists, and we needed to go over and help them, you know, get rid of the communists. I think we've read a lot more about it since then, and know a lot more about what was really going on, but we thought we were saving the Vietnamese from the godless communists. So, and that was our duty to help them, you know, if they wanted to be have a democratic government, we were supposed to help them get that. So that's why we went.
Did you questions for both of you. From your recollections, what was the war a topic of interest in Hillsborough at the time you went, like in newspaper conversations or the general?
I think that it was pretty well, it by the time Bob went in 1970, it was on the news, it was on the TV, and there was the beginnings of anti-war media all the time. I think we didn't question it. Bob had a career, and that's what he wanted to do, was to fly fighter planes, and that was his mission. I mean, you know, that's what he was trained for. And if he was going to go forward in the Air Force, he needed to participate in that. There was never any question, but there certainly were a lot of... I had a sister that was in the Army, and I remember amongst her friends, there was a lot of anti, you know, why would you do that? And yet I grew up in I think typical farming communities here and where I grew up, it's pretty much, you know, you fight for your country and you do your part. And so I don't think there was a lot of anti within our personal communities. Bob came back from...
Should I tell him about Bro, though? My oldest brother is a Catholic priest, and he was actually the principal at North Catholic High School, which burned down in Portland. And he was helping anybody who wanted to get out of the draft escape Canada, whatever it took. So he was really anti-war. And I think he's just anti-war. It didn't matter what war, where, or anything. And he thought that those kids didn't need to be going to war and getting maimed or killed and stuff. So that was going on. That was actually going on when I went over. So my brother was already involved in the anti-war movement.
Where there was a lot of anti-war were at the colleges at that time. And Bob had a brother that was down, and maybe a brother-in-law too, in that time frame at the University of Oregon, getting their master's and doctorate degrees at the University of Oregon. And they mentioned that, you know, that there was, you didn't wear your uniform on campus and that kind of thing. Tell them about when you were...
Well, she was asked that question later, I think, when I came back.
Oh, yeah, right. So, were the extreme anti-war and extreme pro-war, was there any group that was especially influential, like extremist groups? In Hillsborough?
Not that we know of.
Yeah, I guess I'm asking.
I don't think there probably was a lot of anti-war Hillsborough. Certainly not that we ran into.
And we got any word about it. You know, we weren't here all that much because I was, you know, we were down in Arizona. That's where I worked.
Bob was from here, but he didn't. We didn't live here. I came back and lived in where I grew up for that when he was gone. And we did spend quite a bit of time because his dad died in that time frame and his mother was ill, and so I did spend some time in Hillsborough, but it was more family orientated then.
But I don't remember seeing or hearing anything very exciting.
That's important to know, actually. A lot of, when we were looking through the Argus, there wasn't a lot of talk about the war, and it was mostly about the economy and inflation.
I think if this this article coming out right at the height of the anti-Vietnam sentiment, you know, indicates that the Argus is still, you know, patriotic. It's a hometown thing.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling Hillsborough just didn't see the thing like you might have seen at Reed College at the same time or something like that.
Yeah. We had a lot of trouble finding enough articles.
Yeah, I can believe that.
We might have found more in the Oregonian, you know, that would have covered.
What was your job in Vietnam?
I flew A-1s. It's a Sky Raider. That's it right there, the bottom right picture. What we used it for was close air support, the one on the top of there. close air support, search and rescue. Specifically, our job was to find down flyers and protect them until we could get the helicopters in to pick them up and bring them out. We also did escort and long-range infill missions into, now I can tell you, into Laos and Cambodia, even North Vietnam. But it flies real slow, but it's got lots of loiter time, and when we drop something on the bad guys, it hits the bad guys almost every time. Pretty good. Pretty good airplane.
Can you tell me about your experience which led to receiving the Silver Star?
Well, that was, you know, specifically that mission was the raid into North Vietnam to try and release prisoners out of a prisoner of war camp. They had found a camp that was about 22 miles from Hanoi that was pretty isolated, far enough away from, you know, the mainstream that they thought we could sneak in, get in there, get our guys and get out without, you know, getting caught at it. So they had set this mission up and they got a bunch of us back. I actually came back from Vietnam and trained in Florida for almost 2 months. And we trained the whole thing, all the helicopters, all of the support airplanes, the guys that were gonna go on the ground, the commandos. And we trained and trained, we did it till we had it down to a science, and then they picked the night and off we went and we flew the mission. We actually did fly right down, you know, to where we were supposed to go. We put the guys on the ground, they searched around. There weren't any prisoners there. They had moved them out about, actually almost 2 months before. But we got in, we got out. Our only injury we had was one of the helicopter guys, when it landed, it kind of twisted and he got thrown out and it broke a leg. Other than that,
there was an F-105, wasn't there?
Well, we lost an airplane, but they lost them all the time. they didn't need our help to do that.
But they picked up the pilot.
Yeah. But for, you know, a highly successful execution of a mission, not a very successful result of the mission, which is unfortunate. We, in fact, just last fall went to the 30th reunion of the crowd that pulled that mission off down in Florida. It was really pretty good time.
And the POWs.
And the POWs. That were supposed to be there, but
yeah. What is your opinion about why we were unsuccessful in Vietnam?
We never had a clear focus about what we wanted to do over there. If we'd have prosecuted the air war, we could have got Hanoi to quit. We just need, you know, either you had to do it or get out, and we just never figured out what, you know. We did along at it, then we pulled back, and we just never appeared to have the will to get the job done. The difference between Vietnam and Desert Storm is patently obvious. We went over there, we decided what we were going to do, and we did everything until that was done, you know, and it's, you know, we can see what we can do if we put our mind to it. But the politicians got involved. The politicians, or literally the president, were selecting the air targets that we bombed, not the military. The president didn't tell us, go out and, you know, win a battle. He said, go fight the battle just like this. And so our guys were, you know, our hands were tied. We couldn't win that war. Then they would stop bombing. Let the North build everything back up again. Then we'd start bombing again, and then they'd have a lot more missiles and, you know, et cetera. So, and on the ground, it was really the same kind of thing. We had to decide whether we were going to just go on the ground and do it ourselves, or turn it over to the South Vietnamese to do. And we kept vacillating back and forth. Yeah, we'd fight. But no, it's not our job. It's really their job. We're here to help. We're not supposed to be doing that. So we'd back off. And of course, the other thing is, the Viet Cong were very, very clever with how they used the people. You know, you talked about the rural people in Hillsborough. The rural people in Vietnam, you know, people with guns walk into town, you know, okay, you know, guess we're on your side now. And when those guys leave and other guys with guns come in, okay, we're on your side now. And you know, and you can understand that. You know, why would you fight the Viet Cong? What would you have to gain to fight the Viet Cong? You wouldn't have anything to gain. You know, in fact, as soon as you start fighting, they shoot you or your kids or your mother or, you know, and this kind of stuff. And for what? You know, so you can get more rice. So I mean, you know, the because of that, Viet Cong were clever in how they used the Vietnamese people, and it made it very, very difficult to, because, and some of the atrocity things you hear about it, because those, you know, it was hard to tell who was a combatant and who wasn't. So it was a real problem. But you're back to the basic question, why were we there? In hindsight, nobody really knows. You know, the president got us in, you know, several presidents got us into it, that war, and kept us in that war for reasons that I don't think we'll ever figure out.
How were you received in the return to the war?
Well, some places very, very well. Other places, not so well. I came back from Vietnam and went to the University of Arizona to get a graduate degree. We did not wear our uniforms on campus. Those that knew that we were military always, you know, would curse at us and that kind of stuff. One day I had to wear my uniform for some reason. Somebody decided we should have a commander's call, you know, where everybody comes in uniform. I got spit on walking on campus.
This is Arizona?
At the University of Arizona.
Why did you decide to go to Arizona?
Oh, that's the Air Force sent me there. Oh. But I think that would have happened on any campus in America.
So.
Except maybe the University of Portland. I'll bet you it wouldn't have happened.
Why not?
Because they still were pretty... First off, they had an Air Force ROTC program that was still mandatory, which meant that all of the freshmen and sophomores had to be in males, had to be in the ROTC program. So they were all in uniform at least one day a week, you know, and so it was just a different attitude, I would think. But I'm sure that there was still anti-war sentiment, it's just that they wanted to spit on the guys. Well, I would say so.
I would say it was a typical rural farming community, and that had something to do with the reason it was patriotic, and because farmers tend to be that way. They just, you know, you pay your dues and you serve your country, and you know, that's just a mindset to a great extent. And Hillsborough certainly fell into that. How big was Hillsborough back then?
Oh, when I left, it was 10,000.
I mean, Bob grew up on 12th and Oak, and
I was out. I was actually out of the city. 12th Street was the edge of the city when I was a small kid. Yes. But the point is also that you think of Hillsborough as Intel and those kind of things. That was none of those there. In fact, even at the end of the war, I don't believe any of that had started yet. Because, you know, computer
tectonics
chips, you weren't any computers. So.
Tectonics had started.
Tectonics was out there, making oscilloscopes. Okay. So that was the high tech. But basically what
that
you see in all that high tech stuff and the different people that are there because of that, you know, there's a lot more non-rural folks out there now.
So if you don't recall it, any evidence is that the attitudes or opinions of people had changed by the time that you returned?
Oh, I think, no, I would say in general people were tired of the war, even in 1970, when I came home in the Christmas of 70, people were tired of the war. People were questioning why we kept sending people over there. It didn't seem like we were having clear purpose why we were there. So, I, you know, they may not have been anti-war, but they were certainly against continuing without something, you know. I wouldn't say vehement about it, but just, you know, they were starting to question those. Why we were there, what we were doing. And I would say that even Hillsborough, even, you know, little rural Hillsborough, that sentiment was I'm sure my folks were asking that question. My brother certainly was. So.
Was there any effect at all the economy or did anything change because of the war in Israel?
No, you know, I can't imagine what it was. I wouldn't think so, because, you know, we weren't an industry-based town where, you know, like if we made tanks or guns or something like that. We didn't make bombs or bullets. We did make food, so maybe we made a little more food. But I wouldn't think so.
This is for a minute. What was it like for you while Mr. Senko was gone, and did the community support you in any ways?
Well, like I said, we both have large families, so we had a huge family support group, and everyone in the family, you know, was very supportive. Other than that, and he still was supportive of us. He just didn't support the war. Was his brother who was a priest, but I lived at my parents' ranch that year, and I was expecting our third child, and I had like three little ones. He was born while Bob was gone, and you know, but we received regular mail, and I went to Florida with him for 2 months that he was training down there with the three kids, and so I never saw anything, but you know, no one was ever anything but supportive of me. And you know, I lived within a farming community that year that I was there too. When I wasn't in Hillsborough, I was in a much more rural area.
And you know, I'd say the same thing is true of the Antelope, or that whole countryside out there. You know, there was war, the boys were having, you know, had to go to war, and you know,
my youngest brother was in Vietnam. He came home just as you left.
Yeah.
That's right.
It just was kind of, that's facts of life. It wasn't something that you scream and holler about. You just went about life.
Accepted it. We were very accepting then by comparison to what we are now. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is because, you know, everything is covered on TV now. Everything is analyzed. Everything is discussed, and everything is in the papers, and really that's it was very different, the Vietnam War versus Desert Storm. We watched Desert Storm on TV, and that really wasn't true of Vietnam. Much of Vietnam, I think, you knew a lot more of after the fact.
Well, and the other thing is, Vietnam caused people to ask questions that they never asked
that's
before.
True.
All the wars before then, there was a clear reason why we'd gone. You know, Korea, here came the Chinese across the border, you know.
That was an undeclared war.
Yeah, but nonetheless, you know, you could see what was, you know, that when we got into the war, the North Koreans already had swept way far south, all the way down to Pusan. And we got there and we pushed them back, and then the Chinese came, and that was a regular war. You know, and everybody understood, okay, yeah, those poor South Koreans are being overrun by communists, go help them. But in Vietnam, that's what we thought we were going there to do. But pretty soon it was pretty obvious that wasn't what was going on at all. And that the governments that we were trying to keep in power were corrupt and, you know, actually worse than the communists. So, and the bottom line is, why are we doing this? You know, what's our purpose? Why are we here? Because we started asking those questions then, from then on, we couldn't get involved in anything. The military doesn't get involved in anything without everybody asking questions. Why are we doing this? What's going on? Panama, Grenada, you know, everything we do, there's a lot more questioning of it. That wasn't true when
about what was going on in Vietnam. Do you recall anything about the TV coverage while you were here?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, I think, you know, it's just kind of like the body count stuff. Today, you know, we killed this many godless communists and we had this many injuries, you know, or MIAKIA kind of thing. But no, I don't remember there being a whole lot. And of course, no, I'm talking about Arizona because the war started really spinning up and until I went. I was in Arizona, so I don't know what the television had up here very much. So.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I haven't asked?
Well, one thing is that, you know, Vietnam is a beautiful, beautiful country. I actually was stationed at Da Nang for about 2 to 3 months almost, and flew over a lot of Vietnam, you know, all the Benoit down to Saigon and up to the Demilitarized Zone, Asha Valley, and all those places. It really, really is a beautiful, beautiful country. You get back away from the coastline, and you know there are beautiful streams and mountains and stuff. And, it was a real shame that we were, you know, messing it up so bad, and I hope that the Vietnamese were, you know, reclaiming it and making it as pretty as it was before.
Just ask Mr. Cinco, is there anything else that you like to tell me that I haven't asked yet?
The one thing he didn't mention about the mission that he was over there, but maybe this isn't what you're directing your questions at, was that it was significantly successful in the fact that it raised morale of the POWs. They knew that there was someone, you know, that cared and they were trying to get him out. That was the success of that mission.
Well, and it also scared the North Vietnamese into taking them out of isolation, putting them in bigger groups, putting them all into several prisons, bringing them up all the outlying prisons. And that gave them a chance to talk. They had not been allowed to talk to that point. And so now they were in bigger groups, they could talk, and they were able to do a lot more. And morale was a lot better than it is now. Because you got to remember, we were there in the fall of 70. They still didn't come home until 73. So they were there for a couple more years. But they were better years for them.
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.